y'all. Thanks for listening to Killer Queens.
Or KQ if you're nasty.
Welcome to the show where two 90s loving country chicks gab about true crime and tell each other to talk to the hand because the face ain't listening. I'm Torella.
And I'm Tori.
And we're sisters who have always loved true crime and decided to turn that obsession into a show with a light take on the topic.
Kind of like diet true crime, it's all the flavor and fewer calories.
Now with our show, you'll get true crime, 90s nostalgia, and a few four-letter words sprinkled in.
Because I always say that Polly Pockets and true crime go together like peas and carrots.
Be sure to check out our case submission form on our website at killerqueenspodcast.com and follow us on social media and YouTube.
Now grab your Surge, your 3D Cool Ranch Doritos, and your kitten surprise, and let's get into the episode.
This episode contains discussion of child abuse, child murder, and sexual assault. Listener discretion is advised.
On January 27, 2020, Letitia Stauch called the El Paso County Sheriff's Department to report her 11-year-old stepson, Gannon, missing. She said that he'd gone to play with friends, but should have been back home an hour ago. Detectives arrived at the Stauch home, unknowingly beginning an investigation that would last years, revealing that Gannon had been brutally murdered at the hands of someone that was supposed to love him and care for him. Investigators spent months collecting evidence and digging through lie after lie before finally securing an arrest warrant to charge Letitia Stauch with the murder of her stepson.
Yikes.
Don't like that.
Do not like that. No. We do want to give just a, you know, a quick thank you before we begin today. This was requested by Paige Bryson, Tina Hood, Carol Ann Robinson, and Whitney Rogers. Hey, girl, thanks.
Thank you. And thank you to Madison for writing it up.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I guess we should just like,
get right into it?
Yeah.
I think we should. Okay. Yeah.
So Gannon Jacob Stauch was born on September 29th, 2008 to Albert Stauch and Landon Hoyt in South Carolina. The parents referred to their baby boy as their miracle child. He was born premature, weighing only 1 pound, 6 ounces.
Oh, my baby.
Goodness. The doctors didn't think he'd survive, and if he did, it would likely be with severe disabilities. Despite the frightening prognosis, Al and Landon watched as their son fought and grew into a healthy child. 3 years later, Al and Landon had their second child, a girl named Lena. In 2013, while playing on a local softball team, Al and Landon met Letitia Harden. Though the couple had been married for almost 10 years, their marriage was reportedly struggling at this point. They ended up separating during 2014 and then ended up divorcing shortly after. Sometime during this, Al began dating Letitia Harden. I feel like I just need, like, so much more information.
Yeah, they... So Landon and Al met Letitia as a couple.
Mm-hmm.
And then they split up, which is, I mean, it happens, right? Obviously, it's totally fine.
Sure.
But then Al marries Letitia. You know what I mean? Like, it's just.
Yeah, you just wonder.
You just have to wonder.
Yeah. I mean, is it possible that they all, like, it seemed like maybe they met through. Like through the softball situation. Okay. So, okay, you were friendly. And then once you got a divorce, things, you know, took a turn. And like, I mean, yeah, it's just.
It can happen, but it is a little sus, as the kids would
say. Yeah, a little sus. I'm petty enough that I would be like.
What, you liked her before?
Obviously. Obviously.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I don't know. Also, I just need to know, like, was Letitia just absolute batshit at this time too, or did that come later?
I hope to God not. I
mean, yeah.
But there's a lot. I know too much about Letitia at this point to be like, oh, okay, I get it. Cause I don't get it. I'm not getting it.
I'm not getting any of it. Yeah.
Like, she's what we in the biz call somebody whose cornbread ain't done all the way in the middle. Like,
not
there's
even
something.
A little bit. Not even a little bit. Yeah.
Mm-mm.
So, Letitia had also previously been married and had a daughter named Harley. In 2015, Al and Letitia were married and splitting custodial time of Gannon and Lena with Landon. Landon also remarried to a man named Mike Hoyt. The couple lived in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, and Gannon and Lena spent the school year with their mother. They spent the summers with their father and his new wife, who had moved to Alaska for Al's job. So Al worked with the U.S. National Guard and was stationed in Alaska, and Letitia did not like this. Not even a little bit. She didn't like it.
I feel like Alaska sounds like a really cool place to visit for me personally. I don't know if I could live there on account of the extreme temperatures.
Right.
I don't enjoy snow. Not one little bit. Mm-mm. But, and I don't, I just generally don't like being cold either. But wouldn't you think, though, with his job, you would just know that moving is probably going to happen, right? Like, it's on the table at least.
One would think, yeah. I don't know if she just assumed that they would move places she wanted to. Like,
yeah, I don't know if like the military is that way. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think they give you a whole hell of a lot of choice.
No.
They're not like, hey, girl, we were thinking we might move you. Like, do you want to? Do you not want to? Like, where do you want to go? What do you see? I don't think it works that way. Mm-mm. So she didn't like Alaska at all. And it's unknown exactly how much Al knew about Letitia's past, but there were red flags flying from her beginning as early as her high school years.
They always are, aren't they?
Always are. So in 2001, Letitia, who also went by T or Tisha, graduated from Lumberton High School in North Carolina. One website describes her high school career by saying, quote, she excelled in sports and academics, and she also made a fake bomb threat. Those don't go together, do they?
No, it's just so funny to me, like, that sentence as a whole, like, she was really good at crafting in sports. And she had thoughts of being a mass murderer. Like, it's like, okay, whoa.
Yeah, it's like the three most important things about her is sports, academics, but she did call in that fake bomb threat. So we got to include that somewhere. I know. We'll just say she likes sports, academics, and bomb threats. Like,
it's good to be well-rounded, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess so. Shortly after graduating, she was charged with simple assault and communicating threats, but the charges were eventually dismissed. She was then arrested and sentenced to 45 days in jail for stealing a vehicle.
Goodness, she was on a roll, man.
Through all this, though, she obtained her doctorate in education at Liberty University. While living in North and South Carolina, she was charged with several offenses, including domestic violence, battery, and theft charges. So she ends up losing her teaching certificate in both of the Carolinas. Okay, I have a question, though. Especially somebody who's in education, if she lost her ability to teach children because of her dangerous behaviors, why have we not ordered some type of psychological evaluation at this point?
Yeah, absolutely.
Wouldn't that be a red flag to like, hey, she works with, because it's not like she couldn't just go to another state.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That doesn't cross over. It's like you have to do bad things in all of the states, right? Like, it doesn't.
Yeah. I mean, so I just don't understand. Like, we saw these things happening. She lost her ability to teach children in these two states. But we know full well, I mean, but just like hospitals who, you know, take the angel of death or whatever they call them, and they're like, okay, well, you're fired here. We won't file charges against you, and we'll write you a recommendation over here so we don't have to deal with it. I don't know if that's what it is, but like, something is going on here.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean,
well, and for her to, like, okay, I don't think that you should be labeled for your worst mistakes. Like, that's not what I'm saying at all. But if you have been convicted of violent crimes, and then you choose to have a profession that has to deal with children, the elder, like a caregiving type of role,
right?
Maybe you shouldn't be able to do that anymore, because at this point, especially for Letitia, you can't be trusted. Like,
yeah, exactly. Cause she just keeps doing it, keeps doing it, keeps doing it. Like, it's not like
she's a habitual offender.
Yeah. It's not like she made one mistake and, you know, it's, this is over and over and over. It just doesn't make any sense to me. So after remarrying, Gannon's mother, Landon, became pregnant with Gannon and Lena's half-sister. The pregnancy was high risk and Landon was put on bed rest. Al started to become concerned with her ability to care for Gannon and Lena, and he reportedly had concerns about her new husband's drug use as well. So in 2018, Al and Letitia gained full custody of the children. Letitia made it clear she did not want to live in Alaska. Later during trial, Letitia's daughter told the court that her mother made comments about suicide if she was forced to continue living in Alaska. Letitia ended up filing a sexual assault claim against two men who worked with Al, one who was his captain. And many believe that she did this in hopes of getting Al stationed somewhere else, which if that was what she was trying to do, it worked. In 2019, the family moved to Colorado Springs, Colorado. I want to know what Al thought about this, or because obviously he had to know about it. And did he believe that this was true? Did he not? I don't know.
I have absolutely no idea. But I mean, I don't know. Maybe he didn't see any big, he doesn't know anything about her past. I don't think at this point. Right.
Right.
I'm going to go with that. I don't know. But he's probably allegedly, I would think probably like, okay, well, I mean, you got to back your wife up, right? So,
yeah, and maybe? At this point, he may not have any reason to not believe her. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And of course, you know, like we think all claims need to be thoroughly investigated, but she's going to make up so many things by the end of this case, you guys. So we're talking specifically her.
It's honestly horrifyingly impressive how easy it is for her to make shit up. Like,
just wild out of nowhere shit. Yeah. I mean, so they moved to Colorado Springs, Colorado. Now, this was difficult for the kids, but Gannon made friends and was enrolled at Grand Mountain High School in El Paso County. He was a smart kid who could be a bit quiet and shy, but when he was around his friends, he opened up. Like a lot of fifth grade boys, Gannon loved video games. He loved playing his Nintendo Switch. He especially loved the game Sonic, and he'd even started trying to make videos of him like playing the game to put up on YouTube with his little friends.
I love, part of me, it's like, it's so sweet and endearing because it's like, wow, this kid is, he was so young. And in the same moment, it's the saddest thing ever because he was so young.
Yeah, exactly. It just like really drives it home how young he was. His favorite food was tacos, and he spent a lot of time building Legos. I know. Gannon's family and close friends referred to him as G-Man, and his little sister always called him Bubba.
Bubba is such a universal term for a brother, isn't
it? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like Sissy and Bubba, I feel like.
Yep.
Which we never, I've called you Bubba behind your back, but I've never, well, you know.
Not necessarily behind my back, but yeah.
Here's my Bubba. Yep. But anyway. So on Monday, January 27th, 2020, Letitia called Gannon's elementary school and told them that her 11-year-old stepson is going to be staying home that day. He was sick. She was supposed to start a new teaching job, of course, at Mountain Ridge Middle School, but she called out saying that her stepfather was killed after being hit by a car.
Okay. She went real hard with that one.
There are a million reasons to call out. You could make up any reason.
One of the reasons could have been my stepson is sick.
Well, and you know what always works? Always. Diarrhea. Nobody questions that.
No, they sure don't. But she literally
got the splats. Can't go.
Yeah. But my stepfather got hit by a car and was killed. I mean, it was 100% not true.
Right.
So this is the beginning of like, this day starts out with already 11 billion lies.
Yes, exactly.
Just right off the bat.
Yeah. She can't tell the truth. Oh, liar, liar. Somebody needs to make a wish not for a whole day, but for the rest of her life, that she's got to tell the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Gannon's father was out of town in Oklahoma for work, so Letitia was in charge of the kids, and she sent pictures of Gannon lying in bed with his Nintendo Switch right next to him to Al, letting him know that Gannon had a stomach ache and he was resting. The photos were taken around 8:15 a.m. The two ran some errands that day. They went to Petco, they went back home. Just before 7 p.m., Letitia called 911 to report her stepson missing. She was instructed to call the non-emergent number for El Paso County, and so she told them that Gannon had left home to walk to a friend's house to play video games, and that was around 3:15 p.m. She said that he should have been back home an hour ago. Letitia reported that she'd gone to the neighbor or to neighbors and looked around, but she wasn't able to find him. An initial report said that the child was a possible runaway, of course, and Gannon was entered into the state and national databases as an active runaway at 7:32 p.m. Around 10 p.m., deputies from the El Paso County Sheriff's Office arrived at the Stauch home in the 6600 block of Mandan Drive, located in the Larson Ranch neighborhood. I didn't realize how Western is the only word coming to mind. It's very like ranchy there. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Everything is like this ranch and
yeah.
I don't know. I had no idea.
I was unaware of that as well.
I've been to Colorado twice and I never saw not one cowboy. I would think Montana, sure.
Oh,
Wyoming,
yeah.
Maybe. Yeah, yeah, right? Like, I don't. Deputy spoke to Letitia, asking her about Gannon and what had happened that day. She allowed them to look around the house and in the garage, but Gannon was nowhere to be found. Deputies asked which friend Gannon had gone to visit and where they lived. And Letitia was like, I don't know. Why? It's an obvious lie, but why would you? You know what I mean? Like,
he's 11. You mean to tell me that he's going to leave the house on foot? And he's like, I'm just going to go to a friend's house. And you're like, okay, have fun. See you later. See you whenever. I trust you completely.
Listen, we had some, mom was, well, they were both strict, I guess. Strict in the sense that like, we couldn't play in our front yards unattended. We didn't have friends close enough to walk to, but we couldn't just do whatever the fuck we wanted to do. But if we wanted to go somewhere with somebody, they had to meet the person and meet their parents mm-hmm. before we were allowed to do that. So I'm just like appalled that she was like, meh, I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure you'll be able to find it and you won't get lost or, you know, like, yeah, how far are you going to have to walk to get there and all the things?
Mm. Yeah.
Well, I just don't keep up with his friends, so.
Yeah. And again, this is a lie. But it's whatever. She told deputies that Gannon had stayed home from school that day. Another thing, too. Do you remember if we stayed home from school? I remember once. I don't think I was that sick, but we stayed home from school. Or I did. I think you were there. And we watched the movie Phenomenon with John Travolta. Is that the one where he's like an angel or is that Michael? There was one
I think
that
that's Michael.
Okay, Michael. Okay. We watched that movie and I didn't even pay attention to it. But then after that, I was like, okay, can I go hang out at so-and-so's house? And dad was like, if you were too sick to go to school, then you're too sick to do anything. So no. I'm like, shit.
Yucks. Like, yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah.
That I just found that kind of interesting.
But, yeah, that is interesting because she definitely seems like she would have been one to put the hammer down on that.
I would think. But she told them he had stayed home from school because he had a stomach ache since the night before. And she told them about an incident that had happened the night before. She said that she came downstairs to find the carpet on fire. She said that Gannon had knocked over a candle and that it had caught the blanket he was using on fire, as well as the carpet. And she even showed investigators where the carpet was burned and how she'd used the rug to cover it up, but that everything was fine. Unfortunately, deputies were unable to locate Gannon, and none of the information that Letitia provided seemed to indicate where the 11-year-old boy might be. Letitia notified Al that she'd called 911 to report Gannon missing, and Al booked the next flight home.
Okay, so now we're going to talk about more things. But let me tell you.
When you say things, you mean lies?
Yes, exactly. And not a one of them makes sense, and not a one of them goes together.
This makes me 100% sure that she is a sociopath at least
mm-hmm.
because she says these bold-faced lies and it's like she thinks she's pulling the wool over somebody's eyes, but it's like, so I know you're lying. I don't know if you knew that. I know that you're lying, though.
Yeah. It's really wild. Like, you're right. She's got to be, at the very least, a sociopath.
There is no shame in her game.
No. She never gets embarrassed. She never, you know, she'll look at you and say, the sky is purple, which I guess it could be like in some sunset situations, but you know what I mean. And you will be looking at it and she'll be like, the sky is purple. And you're like, no, it's not. It's green. And she will make you feel crazy for thinking.
When is the sky green?
I'm saying just different things.
Okay,
you're making me feel crazy.
Well, you are.
Like, she'll just like look you in the face and be like, like, just, I don't know. It's just wild. So a lot of this is not going to make any damn sense. Okay. And we know that.
Because the reason is it doesn't make any sense.
Exactly. It came from her. Okay. So on Tuesday, January 28th, Letitia rented a 2019 Kia Rio from Avis Rent-A-Car. And she picked up her husband at the airport at 8:50 a.m. And Al was like, why did you rent a car when you have a Tiguan at home? And she's like, well, I don't want to put too many miles on the Tiguan. Is that how you say that?
I always said Tiguan.
Hmm.
My friend, old friend had one, and that's how he called it, but I don't know.
What kind of a car is it? Is it like a...
It's a Volkswagen.
A Volkswagen. Okay.
It's like a little SUV.
Okay. This was a leased vehicle, she says, so she didn't want to put too many miles on it. Okay.
Okay, but my question is, was the plan all along to go pick up Al? Like, even if this didn't happen, even if he got home at his scheduled time, was it to go pick up Al? What car was she going to pick up him in? Yeah.
And he travels for work all the time. So, and I'm sure he was prompted to ask this question because it is out of the ordinary for her.
And mind you, Al's got a car too. So if she didn't want to put miles, why didn't she just take his? Bizarre.
Yeah. So that afternoon, deputies brought in investigators from the sheriff's department to help with the search for Gannon. Detective Jessica Bethel was assigned as the lead detective and quickly contacted Letitia to talk to her about the day that Gannon disappeared. Letitia had a scheduled interview at the sheriff's office at 10 a.m. on January 29th. She told investigators she didn't want them to come to her house because there were children there who shouldn't hear what they're talking about, right? Letitia arrived 2 hours late. She did drive her Tiguan to Guan.
No, it's not like Baguan. It's Tiguan.
I'm going to say Tiguan.
Okay.
Just piss people.
Her Tiguan SUVs.
Exactly. They noticed, though, that the vehicle was wet and looked like it had been very recently cleaned.
Sus among us.
Super sus. Like, and also you're 2 hours late. That's no, rude. They scheduled you at a certain time for a certain reason, but okay, whatever. All right. So this interview, if you didn't think it was already super weird, you know, cause like, you know, she walked up in there 2 hours late and was like, hey guys, like probably with a Starbucks in hand. Like, no explanation, no sorry I'm late or anything. Just like, all right, I'm here, whatever, you know. But it gets super weird. So Letitia brought in written notes with her on several pieces of paper. And so the investigators start asking her questions. And she's like, yeah, I just need to read my notes. Let me just read from my statement here.
What? When has that ever happened?
Like, never.
Yeah.
Very strange. So, now she tells them a different story about the day that Gannon disappeared. So, Letitia explained that when she had arrived home at 2:30 p.m. on Monday, she disarmed her security system. She goes down to the basement. Just get ready. There was a Hispanic male in the basement named Eduardo who attacked her, holding her at gunpoint. Then Eduardo let Letitia go upstairs and greet her young stepdaughter and tell her, hey, go outside and ride your bike. Eduardo let her do this. Then Letitia goes back down to the basement and she claims that Eduardo raped her and possibly that he hit her on the head because she blacked out and there's stuff she doesn't remember, right? Letitia told detectives that during this attack, Gannon had jumped on Eduardo's back and then this man threw him off. Eduardo then held the gun to Gannon and requested a suitcase from Letitia, which she then provided. And then she said that Eduardo abducted Gannon. And then after Eduardo leaves with Gannon and the suitcase, she doesn't call 911. She doesn't make any phone calls. She cleans up. She straightens up Gannon's room.
And also, I mean, that's strange enough, right? And obviously didn't happen. But then when she ends up calling later that evening, she doesn't say, hey, guess what? I've got to, like, you should have called, if this happened, which it didn't, but if it did, you should have called immediately after. But again, it didn't happen. But if you're not going to do that, then when you do call and say, hey, my stepson is missing, be like, oh, wait, yeah, somebody took him.
Yeah.
Let me
think of things that might be important. Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, well, I didn't know you could do anything with his name. It's very Jodi Arias, like, oh, well, two people came in and me, whatever. Yeah.
Or, oh God, I keep bringing her up, Casey Anthony, Zanny the Nanny.
Exactly. So in the affidavit used to obtain an arrest warrant for Letitia, Detective Bethel explained the serious amount of red flags that this conversation put up. And she says, quote, I know from training and experience that if any individual holds another person at gunpoint, he or she would likely not allow the person to have the opportunity to escape as Letitia described. Most crucially, if Letitia's story was accurate, any reasonable person would have immediately called 911 and reported the home invasion, rape, and kidnapping of their child. Letitia called law enforcement hours later and did not report the alleged rape until approximately 2 days later. So, it is very clear that Letitia has completely fabricated the story, but detectives have to do their due diligence. They're trying to corroborate these statements. So they review video footage from a neighbor's security camera that did not show a man entering their residence at all. And after,
maybe he was wearing an invisibility cloak.
Well, did they even ask that? That's the thing.
I don't think they did.
I don't think they did. Now, he wasn't the whole time because definitely at some points Letitia could physically see him.
That's true.
So maybe he removed it when he walked in.
I guess.
I mean, we don't know, you know, but she did see him. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's true.
Maybe he has a button that turns it off and on. I mean, we don't know. Yeah. So after Letitia's report, detectives offered to take her to the hospital to do an exam. Okay. Wouldn't you want to do that so that
you would think
you could get evidence, possibly get a DNA hit or something like that? She said, no, thank you. No, I don't think so. Thanks, but no thanks.
I'm like totally fine, but it totally happened.
It definitely happened, but I don't want to do anything where we could figure out who this person is, though.
No.
No. She told investigators that she'd met Eduardo the day prior to Gannon's disappearance. So, after Gannon reportedly burned the carpet, Letitia drove around the neighborhood to an area where construction was taking place. She met Eduardo there and said, excuse me, sir, we don't know each other. Can you come fix my carpet in my house? And he said, okay. So she's like, perfect. Let me give you the code to my garage door so that you can get in whatever time you see fit tomorrow to fix the carpet for us. I trust you completely with this information. Mm-hmm. I have small children in the home. I'm not worried about that. You seem like a reputable guy. Just right here on the street.
This feels like playing The Sims, where they just walk around willy-nilly and they're like, hey,
what? Yeah.
The sun goes kikakudik. It's like, yeah. That doesn't work. That's not how real life works, where you just walk out and bump into a stranger and you're like, hey, can you do this for me? And they're like, sure.
Yeah, I don't just drive around my neighborhood and if I just see somebody like on a walk or whatever, I'm like, hey, can you come fix something in my house for me?
Right.
What?
Yeah, my garage door is acting funny. Can you come over and fix it?
Yeah, you look like you ought to be able to handle that. Come on. Like, what, am I supposed to fix it? No. You need to fix it. Like,
right.
It just doesn't make any sense. It's just, and she's just going to let him in her hat, like, come in and out as he pleases with a garage door code. Like,
I get when something in your house is broken, messed up, whatever, you're like, we really need to get that fixed. But like 20 minutes after it happens, you're like, I got to go find something right now.
Well, yeah. And just kind of like, weird. Like, if you're going to find somebody because it needs to be fixed, you think you'd like Google, like, carpet restoration, or
I literally don't know which year I'm living in because my first thought was like, hello, Yellow Pages, but it's I guess
almost said that too.
Really?
Yeah. And then I was like, yeah.
We don't have those anymore. Yeah,
sure don't. We sure don't. So at the end of this interview, Letitia started stuffing tissues in her pants. Yeah. She started complaining of shortness of breath and chest pain. So the officers called EMS. Letitia was transported to the hospital, where she quickly recovered.
Convenient.
Obviously, any tests they ran on her revealed no issues, and she ended up just leaving the hospital without telling investigators. If investigators hadn't been suspicious of Letitia's involvement in Gannon's disappearance before this, they sure as hell were now. On January 30th, Gannon's case was upgraded from a runaway to an endangered missing child. Help was requested from the NCMEC and the FBI. For the next several weeks, law enforcement continued to search for Gannon or any signs of where he might be. And each day that passed, they seemed to find more inconsistencies with Letitia's stories and her actions surrounding her stepson's disappearance. As the investigation and search continued, Letitia left Colorado Springs with her 17-year-old daughter after renting a moving van with the intentions of starting over. Her stepson is still missing.
She is a walking red flag. Everything she does is like...
That's why I have to wonder, like, she couldn't have seemed completely normal before this.
Like, unless she experienced some sort of a mental psychotic break or something.
Yeah, like, I just don't, like, and I say normal as, like, you know, fairly socially, just, you wouldn't notice anything is off with her. Like,
mm-hmm.
I don't, it just, because otherwise I feel like Al wouldn't have been comfortable to leave his kids with her if he went out of town. And
yeah, I think what I'm getting from normal, like what you're saying of normal, is like not a walking red flag.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because everything that we know about her is.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I don't get it. We're going to talk about the arrest warrant. And this is, the timeline is vague on this, but Madison presented it all together with the submitted affidavit, so that's what we're going to go with. But throughout February, detectives gathered evidence and testimony that seemed to all point to one conclusion. Letitia Stauch had murdered her stepson. Believing they had more than enough evidence to prove Letitia's guilt, the El Paso County Sheriff's Office submitted an affidavit on February 28th, just over a month after Gannon disappeared, requesting a signed warrant for her arrest. The affidavit outlined Gannon's disappearance and what they'd found during their investigation. They determined that on the day Gannon was reported missing, he did actually stay home from school that day. The photographs that Letitia sent of Gannon lying in bed to Al were timestamped, which proved that he was still alive that morning. A neighbor's security camera showed footage, I guess that works. A neighbor's security camera footage showed two individuals, which were believed to be Letitia and Gannon, and they left their house in Al's Nissan Frontier around 10:15 a.m. So you can drive Al's truck. Though the camera was a few houses down, the assumptions were based on size and physicality, which matched Letitia and Gannon. The Frontier returned home around 2:29 p.m., and Letitia is seen getting out of the car and going into the home. Gannon was not seen on camera, but detectives do believe that he walked back into the house as well. Letitia left her cell phone at the house, which was super strange considering how much she used it. There was a text from Gannon's cell phone to Harley, his older stepsister, telling her that Letitia had left her a phone at home. So just text Gannon if Harley needed Letitia for anything. Investigators obtained surveillance footage from the Petco in Colorado Springs, which showed Letitia making a purchase around 11:22 a.m. Gannon was not on the video footage. And Letitia had said that he had stayed in the car due to not feeling well. It's unknown where the two were between the time they left Petco and 1:22 p.m. At 1:22 p.m., Letitia was seen on surveillance video at the same Petco making another purchase. That's a lot of Petco runs, man.
Yeah, and I do a lot of Petco runs because I give my dogs everything they want.
Yeah.
Anytime they want it. And I don't even go to Petco that much.
Twice in one day. I don't know. I've gotten to the point where I'm like, I'm making one stop.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Gannon's cell phone received a text from his dad at 12:06 p.m., to which he did not respond until 1:21 p.m. His response asked his father if he could play Zelda, and his dad was like, not today. Bummer. This is believed to have been truly sent from Gannon. At 1:43 p.m., an internet search was made on Gannon's phone saying, quote, can my parents find my cell phone, period, if it's off? And it's the phone and the if, there's no space between it. It's like they meant to put a space, but accidentally hit the period.
Mm-hmm. And this is something Letitia did
often,
all the time.
I'll admit I have done it, especially in a search, like a Google search. I cannot get myself to, the space is too close to the period.
It really is. It is very close together.
But it's very Letitia, like that. Oh, that's so Letitia.
It's a telltale. Yeah, it's like how, oh my God, what is his name? Old guy who burps a lot. Robert Durst spells Beverly Hills.
Yes, it's unmistakably Letitia. So, okay, they arrived back at the house around 2:20 p.m. Letitia's cell phone did not unlock for 25 minutes until after she got home. And again, as much as Letitia was on her cell phone, that is strange that she didn't check it immediately. Because I'm that way too, I guess. Like if I leave my phone somewhere, forget it. And then like it's like I left an arm at home, you know, like I don't know how I live without it. And then as soon as I get home, like, I got to check it. Like, I got to, did I get anything? And the answer is typically, no, I did not.
I know,
anything,
it's really funny. I check it. Yeah, because like, yeah, I would just die without my phone pretty much, I feel like. Like, it's like, you got to have it, you got to have it. It's like, it's really not anything important. Yeah, it's like not that big of a deal, you know?
Right. But, well, and odds are the day that you forget it, that's when you desperately actually need it for something, you know? But anyway.
Yeah.
The Stauch family had an ADT security system, which had a motion detector inside the home. So during the 25 minutes where Letitia's phone remained unlocked, there was motion activity noted both upstairs and downstairs. And Gannon's bedroom was downstairs. Gannon's little sister, Lena, she arrived home from school at about 3:15 p.m. She told police that Letitia told her that Gannon was asleep in her bed and she couldn't see him. Why? After this, Letitia told her stepdaughter, you need to go outside and play. At 3:55 p.m., Al texted his son's cell phone. That was a rough one.
Woo.
Was not read until almost 4 hours later, and there was no reply. Harley, Letitia's biological daughter, picked up Lena from the house around 4:45 p.m., and just before 5 p.m., Letitia texted Harley and asked her to bring home carpet cleaner, trash bags, and baking soda. Clean up kit.
Yeah, tell me you're cleaning up a murder scene without telling me you're clean. And having your daughter pick that up for you, that's so messed up.
And she's 17 at this point. She can drive, but she's still a child.
Yeah.
And no matter what, she's still your child.
Exactly.
Even, no matter what age.
Yeah, and she, I mean, again, has no reason to believe that you have murdered her stepbrother.
Mm-mm. Detectives believed that Letitia murdered her stepson after arriving home, likely before Lena had gotten home from school. When she sent her stepdaughter outside to play, she was likely cleaning up the murder scene. It was immediately sus to investigators that Letitia had rented a vehicle the day after Gannon disappeared. She refused to tell anyone where her Tiguan was parked until detectives learned that it had been parked in the airport short-term parking. You rented a car to go to the airport, and your Tiguan was already at the airport. Crazy old bitch.
But she didn't want to put the miles on it.
Listen, I get it. Miles are very important to me. Mileage. But you don't want the wear and tear on your car.
Sure.
So the important thing to do is if you don't want to drive to the airport in your car to put the mileage on it, you go ahead and you drive it there the day before because those miles don't count.
Mm-mm.
So you drop it off.
Yep.
Then you somehow make it to a rental car place and you use that car. And then you have to go back and get your other. You see what I mean?
Yeah, but I think as long as she drove backwards the whole way, because I learned that in Ferris Bueller's Day Off, it's opposite day for miles.
Exactly. Yeah. Didn't happen. Oh, Lord. She refused to tell anybody, okay, but the Tiguan's at the airport, right? Until detectives learned that it had been parked in the airport short-term parking, Letitia went and got her Tiguan on the evening after Gannon disappeared. So Detective Bethel noted, quote, "I submit Letitia could not have picked her husband up in the Volkswagen Tiguan because it likely would have been or would have revealed evidence of Gannon's murder, including blood or the actual remains of Gannon himself." Bethel wrote that they believed that Letitia used her Tiguan to transport Gannon's remains out of the home. And remember, she arrived late to her police interview on January 29th. And the vehicle looked like she had recently cleaned it. Video footage was found that showed a vehicle matching Letitia's at a car wash prior to the interview. Strange time to try to get your car wash.
Yeah, this is a 2-hour car wash, too. She was 2 hours late. Yeah. Has anybody ever, I've never spent 2 hours at a car wash.
I recently had my car fixed. A mailbox hit me and I had to have it fixed. And when I got it back, they were like, don't wash your car for like 30 to 45 days. And I was like, done. I take that shit very, very literally. So I went ahead and didn't have it washed for like 3 months. And then recently I was like, all right, I got it. Like, this is ridiculous now. So I went and had it washed. And then, of course, 2 days later, it rains. But I knew it. They were talking about rain on the news. And I was like, of course it's going to rain because I just washed my car. But I spent a total, I swear, 15 minutes at the car wash. I was like, and I even did the vacuuming, but I was like, no. Okay, I'm done. I don't want to be here anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Like 2 hours.
What 2 hours.
Well,
I didn't have a murder scene or a transporting of, you know, remains to clean up. So that's why it didn't take me that long.
Exactly.
Oh, what a piece of shit. A search warrant granted them full access to the Tiguan. The vehicle had been backed into the garage at Letitia's home on the day Gannon disappeared. There were several areas where the forensic team found, quote, evidence of suspected blood. This included the vehicle's back bumper and the step plate of the bumper. Evidence of Gannon's blood was found on the garage door, coinciding with where the trunk of the Tiguan would have been located. A search warrant was also submitted to obtain the data that would give estimated locations of the Tiguan during the time surrounding Gannon's disappearance. During the times of 8:30 and 10:20 p.m. on January 28th, the day after Gannon was reported missing, car data indicated that the Tiguan was found in a few different areas in the northwest area of Colorado Springs. It showed that the vehicle was in the area of Highway 105 and South Perry Park Road between 9:15 and 9:30 p.m. Detective Bethel wrote in the affidavit that she believed that this was when Letitia disposed of Gannon's remains. The affidavit continued on to detail Letitia's later claim that she was raped and that Gannon was abducted by the mysterious Eduardo. She had claimed that the assault took place between 3:30 and 4:30 p.m., but there were several text messages sent and a phone call from Letitia's cell phone during that period. None of which were to text the police or call the police, mind you. And none of them, to whoever she sent them to, none of them, she never said anything about this alleged assault.
No help, no, yeah.
No. The house's motion security system also tracked whenever a door was opened or closed. And during that same hour period, the back door on the main level of the house was open and closed 10 times, which did not track with the assault and abduction story, clearly. Detectives compared the average motion activity from the basement during the hours of 3 and 5 p.m. on the day that Gannon disappeared to the average motion activity in the same location on other days. And on January 27th, the amount of motion was significantly higher. Detectives believed this was due to Letitia going up and down the stairs multiple times after murdering Gannon to clean up the scene.
So the Stalk residence was searched by detectives multiple times after Gannon disappeared. The two-story home had a two-car attached garage. There were two bedrooms in the basement, including Gannon's, and then there were two other bedrooms upstairs. While searching the home, they used a test similar to luminol. There were several areas that indicated, quote, the likely presence of blood. There were traces in the hallways leading from the downstairs utility room to Gannon's room, up the staircase, and into the garage. There was obvious, visible blood in Gannon's bedroom. In a corner of his bedroom, blood appeared to have seeped through the carpet, the pad, and into the concrete below. There was also blood spatter on the wall. Does she think nobody can see these things? Like, I...
Read a fucking book, Letitia. Like,
Yeah. Gannon's mattress had a red stain on the corner that matched up with where the blood on the wall and the carpet were found.
Thank God she is such a dummy.
I know.
But what a dummy she is.
Yeah. Detective Bethel explained that the blood found in Gannon's room aligned with where his head and torso would have been on the bed. There was other evidence of blood that had been attempted to be cleaned up on the baseboards and electrical outlets covered. Further searches of the home found multiple carpet brushes with fibers on them in the dishwasher, along with an empty gallon container of vinegar. Like, she went through all these steps in so many ways, which all just scream, I did this, but still. And then she just leaves all of this visible blood down there. And she knows the police are looking at this. Like, well, and she comes up with a story for the blood, but.
Yeah. I know.
Like, what is happening?
Again, like, thank God in heaven she is such a freaking idiot, but.
Exactly. On March 17th, two bridge inspectors were doing a routine inspection of the Escambia River Bridge on I-90 near Pace, Florida, not far from Pensacola. One of the inspectors saw a suitcase underneath the bridge and walked over towards it.
It's never good when you find a suitcase.
No, it's not. It's really not. He noticed that it was really heavy and it had a strong smell coming from it. He opened the suitcase and was horrified at what was inside. He later testified that he first saw, quote, two little feet with football socks, which told him it was human remains. This poor baby. Like, I just don't. Oh my gosh.
Threw him away like garbage. And he absolutely was not garbage. He was not trash to be thrown away.
No.
And I think it's also not, obviously, the victim here is Gannon. There's no doubt about it. But that ripple effect, these two bridge inspectors, they're going to have to live with that for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Gannon's and just imagine, like, you know. Yeah, it's so far away. So it's 1,300 miles from his home. So there's a real chance, which obviously is what was hoped by his killer, that they wouldn't know who this was or it wouldn't be traced back. So, like, the possibility that his parents would never be able to lay him to rest. It's just awful to do that to people. Like, obviously, all of it's awful, but, you know, that's just like another, like,
you couldn't even give them that one little tiny thing, right? That, like, out of everything, couldn't at least do that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Just freaking terrible. And so this was identified to be Gannon Stauch. Dr. Susan Ignacio performed the autopsy on the remains, ultimately determining that he'd suffered 18 sharp force injuries, 4 blunt force injuries, and 1 bullet wound to his jaw.
My God. And to me, that, I mean, overkill, one, but also premeditate, like when you bring 3 different weapons.
Yes. Yeah.
This is not, and not at all, I like, killing's killing. I don't think, you know, obviously that is crime of passion, heat of the moment, whatever that determines, like, first, second, third degree murder. But, like, this is, you can't, there's no denying that this was, to me, planned.
Yes, absolutely. Well, and you factor that in. So, like, obviously, his manner of death is ruled as a homicide, but the toxicology report found acetaminophen, which is Tylenol, and hydrocodone in Gannon's system. Now, Al later said, I had had an injury and I had a prescription filled for that, but I kept it in the nightstand away from the kids, which I would say the nightstand is not necessarily away from kids because I would assume they can reach that. But anyway.
Well, at 11, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so,
but it's not out in the open to be like, hey, everybody.
Right, but what is that going to do in an 11-year-old's body? It's going to make them very sleepy. There's no reason he should have had that in his system.
Right. I could, it would make more sense to me because of the alleged stomach ache from the night before. If he had, like, Finnergan, that mm-hmm. makes you sleepy, but, it, you know, you could argue that, well, he needed it for his tummy ache.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This not so much. No. I mean, it just, that's just another layer of that, like, I mean, obviously.
Premeditation.
Yeah, exactly. Additional charges were filed against Letitia, which now included first-degree murder after deliberation, 8 counts of committing a crime of violence, child abuse resulting in death, tampering with the deceased body, and tampering with evidence. Gannon's mother, father, and little sister were absolutely devastated. They couldn't believe that their favorite little boy had been so brutally murdered by someone that they'd trusted to take care of him. In a written statement, Al wrote, quote, my little boy is not coming home. We will never play Nintendo again. No more Taco Tuesdays. No more G-Man for the world. The person who committed this heinous, horrible crime is one that I gave more to than anyone else on this planet. And that is a burden that I will carry with me for a very long time. I mean, and that's, you know, part of that ripple effect too, because, you know, it's one thing when something like this happens and it's somebody you don't know and, you know, all those things. I think parents probably find a way to take the blame on themselves, you know, well, if I had done this or if I, you know, it's, you always do that as a parent, but this is somebody that he married.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I know in his heart, he's like, okay, well, if I hadn't brought her in, you know, this wouldn't have happened. Now, of course, he could not have known that, but that's just another added layer of the ripple effect that he's got to live with. He's already lost a son. Like, it's just awful.
Right.
The trial date was stalled as Letitia's attorneys filed motions to have her bonded out of jail.
Why?
Yeah. These were obviously denied, thank goodness. She had multiple other charges added to her case after she slipped out of her handcuffs on the way from South Carolina to Colorado and attacked a deputy.
She's quite the little gem, isn't she?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She also formed a plan to escape from the El Paso County Jail and was charged on that as well.
Which she needs a fucking punch card at this point.
Yeah. I feel like at this point she is, because she ends up going with, you know, pleading insanity. I think she's trying to play into that at this point, but still, like,
that's very Margaret. No. Shit, what is her name?
Oh, yes.
Dial.
The one who yells all the time.
Yeah. Something Dial. Deal.
Marjorie Armstrong Deal.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. There we go. From Evil Genius. If you, yeah.
It also snapped on her, but yes.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Two mental health evaluations were performed on Letitia, which both ruled her competent to stand trial. On February 26th of 2021, the judge agreed to let Letitia represent herself.
Bold move, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off.
Well, then less than a week later, the court announced that she would not be representing herself and will be getting new public defenders. Letitia originally pleaded not guilty to the charges, but in February of 2022, she ends up changing her plea to not guilty by reason of insanity. The case was yet again delayed, so this time so that Letitia could be evaluated at a state hospital. The defense continued to stall, telling the judge that more time was needed for her evaluation. After the first evaluation reported her as sane, her defense requested another evaluation with their own experts. A date for trial was set for March of 2023. On March 22nd, the defense reported to the judge that their most recent evaluation stated that Letitia was insane at the time of Gannon's murder. And they only had to get, you know, like 8 evaluations to get the answer they needed. So...
It's exactly what we've talked about with, like, okay, you just keep getting evaluations until you get the answer that you want, clearly.
And obviously this happens because we, on Doc Jams, we've been covering the curious case of Natalia Grace. Like, they just went to different people until they finally got somebody to be like, yeah, she's older than she seems. Or, you know, like,
well,
obviously
okay.
This happens.
And wasn't the... Lori Vallow, wasn't that delayed because of her claiming mental incompetence, insanity, something like that?
Yeah, I think so. Which that trial just finished up too.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But I think it's like, I think when I was a kid or like when I was younger before we started doing this, I was like, I don't know if I actively thought that it was easy to just be like, well, I was insane, but I thought it was easier. You know what I mean? And now I'm like, When is that? It rarely happens that
right.
The court will be like, yes. And then guess what? If you do get through and get the insane plea, guess where your ass is going? You're not going home.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you know, one could argue that, like, yeah, you'd obviously have to not be in your right mind to murder an 11-year-old child.
Mm-hmm.
But how many things have we seen her do to cover up? And that's the thing. Being legally insane at the time of a crime means that you cannot tell the difference between right and wrong. Like, you don't know that what you're doing is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why Andrea Yates was able to...
I was going to say her. Yes.
Yeah, because she... Because of her postpartum psychosis, she legitimately believed that she was saving her children by murdering them. Like, she did not know that what she was doing was wrong at that time. But yeah. Letitia, and again, Andrea didn't ever try to cover it up, you know, like all those things. She didn't do the things that you would do if you knew that it was wrong. So, but Letitia, she's making up all kind of lies. She's telling people this, she's telling people that. She's making
playing
up this
car.
Story.
She's
yeah. Yeah. Renting yeah. a car. Yeah. She's doing all kinds of things to completely hide everything.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, bold move, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off. And we're going to throw a curveball at you.
Yes, we are.
We're going to make this a two-part because the trial just ended fairly recently. And you guys know I love to watch a trial. So we wanted to like really dig into the trial and kind of go a little bit more in depth on that because there's just a lot of evidence there. So next week or right now,
whenever, yeah,
if you're a patron, we're going to go through the trial and obviously the verdict and all of those things. But yeah.
Yes. So stay tuned for part two. But we love you and thank you so much for hanging out with us. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this case. Connect with us on Instagram or Facebook to continue the conversation. Thanks for listening and we will meet you back here next week. Bye.
The theme song for the show is created and composed by Stephen Toby. You can find more of Stephen's work on SoundCloud. Our logo was created by Sloan Williams of Sophisticated Crayon. You can find more of her work on Etsy. Visit us at killerqueenspodcast.com for merch and other info about the show.